Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Rivian's EV charging scorecard unveiled, more senior names depart Tesla, and a convertible GT EV from Maserati. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you why the Italians forced Alfa Romeo to change the name of their next EV. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. EV News Daily is your trusted source of EV information for Tuesday, 16th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We go live at 5 p.m. UK, that's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get these shows as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We have a bit more news of Tesla's layoffs, which happened around midnight on Sunday, as many staff were grappling with the news and a two-hour queue to get into one of their facilities because the security staff literally had to scan the badge of every employee. And if yours didn't scan, you were getting back on the shuttle bus and going back to the car park, you were fired. Some big names leaving Tesla. One of those, actually one of their named executives. So there'll be a filing announcing this. Drew Baglino, a senior executive responsible for Tesla's powertrain and battery technologies, according to his social media post, has resigned from the company. His departure marks the second high-ranking executive within a year. That followed Tesla's long-serving CFO, Zachary Kirkhorn, when he resigned in August 2023. Well, Drew Baglino was the SVP of engineering and notably active and responsive on social media, often engaging with public and technical inquiries. I mentioned only on this podcast last week that he replied to one of my good friends, Kyle Connor, from the Out of Spec channels about the Cybertruck getting a speed boost or a charging curve improvement over the air. That was 3 or 4 days ago, and he was still posting on social media, and there's no reason why, if he knew he was leaving on Sunday and that coincided with the layoffs, that he would stop posting. But he seemed full steam ahead. Now, he joined the company 18 years ago alongside co-founder and former CTO JB Straubel, rising to the lead of batteries, motors, drive units, and energy. His loss is a significant loss to Tesla's core business, a long-serving, very well-educated and very knowledgeable executive leaving the business will always fill a hole. But of course, Tesla have, well, had as of whenever you want to count, you know, 125,000 employees, 140,000 before the layoffs. They have a lot of strength in depth. No doubt they have people who can take these positions. The other name is Rohan Patel, Tesla's Vice President of Public Policy and Business Development. He also left the company, a very senior name. He joined Tesla in 2017. He was the Special Assistant to President Obama for Intergovernmental Affairs and a senior advisor for climate and energy. In fact, a name that's been around the e-mobility and EV community for many, many years before that as well. During his tenure at Tesla, Patel managed to he managed the company's interactions with various government entities and regulatory bodies, and two very big names with, you know, big shoes to fill, big responsibilities for whoever steps into those roles. Now, I do want to give a special mention to the Electrek coverage over the last 36 hours or so. In fact, over the weekend, Electrek were reporting on the rumours of mass layoffs, between 10 and 20,000 layoffs, which I didn't report on this podcast because it was just a rumour, but it turned out to be absolutely true. So fantastic reporting from that website and their editor-in-chief, or their chief editor, Fred Lammer, who's been around a long time in the EV community, a long-time Tesla fan, but also someone who's written about EVs for an exceptionally long time, and they got it absolutely right over the weekend. So props to Electrek. And a story yesterday which says their $25,000 EV, the NV9 as it was codenamed internally, is indeed on the back burner. Postponed, cancelled, call it what you will. Now, this follows a Reuters report which spoke to at least three, if not more. It's a very well-sourced Reuters report saying that agreements with suppliers were being cancelled and postponed, and people were being told to step down from that project and work on other things, which Mr. Musk, the CEO, very quickly said Reuters is lying on his social media network. But the report also said they were going to focus on robo-taxis, and so they clearly weren't lying about that, because hours later he would say a robo-taxi unveil on the 8th of August this year. And so we don't quite know what he was saying wasn't true. It could just have been that the Reuters language, which was the $25,000 EV, the entry-level car, was cancelled, he might have objected to that word, because they might do it in 10, 15 or 30 years. And so maybe it's not cancelled, but maybe it is postponed indefinitely. But whatever word they chose could have been the reason why he said Reuters is lying. But it does seem, according to Electric, whose reporting has been bulletproof lately, that indeed that car is no longer being worked on. Internally references the NV9. It has been postponed. The project is inactive. Doesn't mean it can't start again, and it may well do someday. Despite Elon Musk's denial of reports claiming the project's cancellation, internal sources have confirmed to Electric that funding has been entirely withdrawn. So I said this on the podcast last week. It would have been much more useful, a much more conventional CEO of a listed company probably would have left it up to the communications department to communicate that, what the Reuters report meant. It could have been that it's moving back 6 months or a year. But simply to say, well, this news organization is lying was the word I used was unhelpful last week. And I stand by that. It was a very unhelpful response. And I understand that is probably part of his public persona and his character and his relationship with the media. It just doesn't help because people are investors in that company and fans, and they want to buy the vehicles if they just want to know what's going on. It doesn't really help. But the discontinuation of the NV9 project aligns with a recent wave of layoffs impacting many team members. Many people, we gather, who left over the weekend and yesterday were working on this project. Tesla's current focus has shifted away from affordable vehicles to a robo-taxi program, something that was running concurrently. These were two separate vehicles, perhaps sharing a platform, but a cheap EV would have obviously been, to an extent, decontented, if you can do that anymore to a Tesla, but also the choice of materials would have been different. Hopefully it would have been built at scale, which have reduced the price in terms of cost efficiencies, whereas the robo-taxi was also designed to be a self-driving vehicle. Question marks over whether it would have a steering wheel and pedals, for instance, if it was fully approved ever by the authorities to be autonomous, whereas many people are saying, well, maybe the robo-taxi would be sold as the cheap car. But it appears not to be the case. I'll pop a link to Electric in the show notes. And finally, before we move on from this story, once again, Electric having obviously some very well-placed sources within the company. They say that particularly two people have also left as part of that sweeping amount of layoffs. Anthony Thurston was the senior manager of cathode materials and manufacturing at Tesla, was dismissed. The Gigafactory in Texas is crucial for providing processed cathode materials needed for Tesla's 4680 battery cell production. That was something that the aforementioned Drew Baglino was heading up. Rumors have said that it has been a bit of a money pit in order to get their own cells off the ground, but to fire the senior manager of cathode materials and manufacturing is definitely a statement about where they think progress has got to. Elon Musk also redirected any focus away from the cheap vehicle, the $25,000 so-called Model 2, to the robo-taxi program, advocating for the allocation of all resources available to go towards robo-taxis, including the construction of a new data center as part of the factory's expansion to massively increase their computing capability in order to process all of the AI data around self-driving. Additionally, several team members, one of those being Amir Mashahi, the director of infrastructure at Tesla Gigafactory in Texas, also terminated as part of those changes. So you could say that there has been somewhat of a changing of the guard in terms of working on key projects, whether that is because they want new people leading them or because those projects are being cancelled, postponed, mothballed, we don't know, but we look forward to finding out more. All right, let's move on and talk about something a bit more positive, should we? And that's Rivian innovating with an EV charging reliability grading system. I absolutely love this story. Let me tell you all about it. Rivian yesterday announced they were introducing a new system that grades each charging station's reliability, aimed to enhance route planning around charger performance. Now, the news became public last week, but I must make a tiny confession. I knew that this was coming because I helped my good friend Tom Malogny out with the video that he put out yesterday as well. Link in the show notes. Please go and watch this if you're interested in this story. Or just pause this podcast and go and watch that one. It's far better than this one, because Tom sat down with one of the senior software people at Rivian, Wasim Ben Said, and had a long interview about what this was all about. So I knew it was coming and I was really excited and I couldn't wait to tell you. Well, this grading initiative is part of the latest software update over the air that's rolling out to R1Ts and R1Ss. Let me explain a little bit more. Charging stations are being evaluated by Rivian based on the data collected during each charging session. Now, every time you plug in and do a CCS protocol charging session, there are, depending on how granular you want to get, you could say between 15 and 30 something different actions that happen between, you know, charger side, car side, between charger and the car. And so at its deepest level, there's a lot of data going on that the car can collect, and that's exactly what Rivian are doing, but presenting it back to you in a way that will improve the way that you charge your vehicle. All of that data will be collected, the charger's peak rate that was supplied, the payment success, the speed at which you made the payment, overall session success, and they're using a kind of a school grading system, the A to F system. And then when they have enough data, and there is a limit, there's a lower limit on how many charging sessions have to happen before they'll start to grade a charger, they will then present to you the A's and the B's in terms of navigating. Grades are visible to drivers during route planning and in the navigation and charging interfaces, helping to inform your decision on where you want to charge. Now, the grading system covers all fast charging sites accessible to Rivian vehicles. That includes the Rivian Adventure Network, and no, they are not going to juice the score of their own chargers. They already admitted that some of their chargers had a lower score than they would want, and that is very useful data for their teams to go, actually, let's find out why. Is there an infrastructure issue? Is there something further up the line that we need to fix? That they can get onto that. Tesla Supercharger Network, now available to Rivian owners. That's on here as well. They require the Rivian-provided adapter. Now, Wassim Bensaid mentioned to The Verge, I'll pop a link to The Verge story in the show notes, said that every time one of our vehicles interacts with the charger, we have a number of data which are uploaded to the cloud to give us an accurate understanding of the health of the session. So we get data related not only to the number of successful sessions, but how many trials did you make before it would start charging? How was the payment? How's the speed of the interaction? What's the overall peak performance within a session? And what's the thermal derating behavior? And this is key. This is all measuring hard data in order to present it in a way in an A to F grading system that makes sense to you and I, the drivers, but not in a way that is too complicated to understand. And crucially, not subjective reviews on apps or websites. Now, if you've been charging your EV for any period of time, you'll know that there are various websites and apps, some of them decades old, which have collected crowdsourced information, and they've been very, very useful until now. But maybe you, like me, have seen those reports on certain chargers, and you go to have a look at a charger. Sometimes people have posted pictures, and that's good. Sometimes they'll say, well, I didn't like this charger. It's awful. It was dirty around there. And you go, well, that's got nothing to do with charging your vehicle. Perhaps the charger is in a situation that's owned by motorway services or something, and that's the bins, and whether the bin's overflowing, that's nothing to do with the charger. More commonly, I've seen, maybe on a 150-kilowatt charger, somebody says, terrible charging session, only took 75 kilowatts, you know, peak charge. Okay, that's great for you. What car do you drive? What was the temperature? What was your state of charge when you arrived? And, you know, you're driving a Hyundai Kona? Great. You're never going to get a faster charge speed than that, because people don't know what they don't know. And if they were told by the dealership some wrong information when they bought the car, maybe they did their own research wrong, maybe they misunderstand DC fast charging. We don't all need to be fast charging and battery chemistry experts to drive EVs, because we shouldn't have to be. But we have a basic understanding of, well, my car can only charge at X speed, and if the charger goes faster, my car's never going to get to that. So you can't trust those reports, or rather you have to have an extra layer of knowledge to work out whether these crowdsourced reports are any good or not. And Rivian are trying to cut through that with data and present it to their own drivers as something, well, a little more cut and dry. Now, as Tom Malogny explained on the Inside EVs website, if a Rivian vehicle plugged into a 350-kilowatt Electrify America charging station at a low state of charge and the battery was warmed up, they've preconditioned the battery, it's done its star jumps and squat thrusts, and the car is ready, it's warmed up for action, and it's calling for more than 200 kilowatts. And Rivian know that that car, that's battery state of health, it's in a good condition. The car can take 200 kilowatts. There were no thermal issues. There was no DEG issue. But the Electrify America station delivered 125 kilowatts. That station gets dinged in their system. It's granular information that hasn't been available now until this date. And if the customer requires multiple plugins to even find a working charger, the charger gets dinged because they'll know, is it a Rivian issue? Was the battery not ready? Could the car only ever take 125 kilowatts? In which case, we don't know if it was the charger's fault. They wouldn't ding it in that case. Rivian's route planning tool is unique in incorporating collective charger reliability data directly into its nav recommendations. The system also indicating if the vehicle's peak charging rate surpasses the charger's capability, enhancing education. It's a really key thing. User information and decision-making in reliability of charging and navigation as well. I can't tell you how brilliant this is. I think the Rivian just raised the tide, if I can say that, of the EV industry in one go. Because all of a sudden you think, well, I want my car manufacturer to have this. I want that data on my screen. We should all have access to that data. Well done, Rivian. It's because they do their own software. They have their own software teams. They're not buying it in. They write their code themselves. And this is one of the ways, as well as being able to get access to the Tesla Supercharger network quicker than anybody else, apart from Ford. I don't know if there was a deal for Ford to be first, as they were the ones that a year ago went with the announcement first. But Rivian certainly weren't second. And yet their vehicles can already use them. It's because they're agile and they could work with the Tesla team and get the software changed quicker than perhaps some of the larger, maybe more slow moving companies. Like, well done, Rivian. This is brilliant. Top marks. Well, let's move on. If you fancied a GT soft top, very fast convertible EV, and you happen to read the news that as part of Tesla's layoffs, the head of that Roadster design program was another name to go. So if the head of the Roadster design program has gone, is the Roadster permanently, use the word you want, cancelled, mothballed, postponed, whatever. Don't shout at me. But whether Tesla will never make their new Roadster, Maserati have said, all right, well, we'll have a go then. And they've unveiled it. And wow, it's a bit special. Whoever designed this, he or she should sleep very well at night because they're very good at their job. Maserati introducing the Gran Cabrio Folgore, a convertible electric GT. Soft top, three electric motors, and one motor mounted on the front axle, two on the rear, 402 horsepower on each motor. But at the minute, the battery technology that they are using for the launch vehicle can't quite make the most of all that power. So at the minute, they're limiting it to 751 horsepower or 996 pound-feet of torque because of the battery discharge limits. That will likely be changed as they update this vehicle and add new battery technology. 83 kilowatt hour usable battery. So they can, discharge about 600 kilowatts of power from that battery. Future advancements will obviously increase that. The electric Gran Cabrio has a 278-mile range or 447 kilometres. Structural enhancements have been made to the sills and rear tray to ensure ride quality is maintained with a greater emphasis on comfort over agility in this model. Maserati's engineering focus for the Gran Cabrio Folgore has prioritised the driving comfort of a Grand Tourer. The engineering chief of the GT and the Quattroporte product lines saying that this is all about comfort, as it's a grand touring vehicle. And I'll pop a link in the show notes to a whole photo gallery if you want to go and drool over this. Oh, I should mention the price. If it's under 200 grand, I'd be surprised. Hyundai are up next, and they are absolutely on fire with their racing ambitions. The IONIQ 5N is a physically different car to the IONIQ 5. It's wider, it's longer, it's got different thermal management, it's engineered differently. And I think they'll do that with the IONIQ 6 as well. But as for the N, Hyundai are preparing to compete at this year's Pikes Peak International Hill Climb. They're taking four of their IONIQ 5 Ns in June to go and do the hill. Two of the vehicles are production models. We know that at least two of them, I think two of them will probably be special modded racers. They've also got their racing series coming soon as well. But we know that two of the vehicles, at least for now, will be very lightly modified road-going vehicles. And so they'll have a roll cage, they'll have a fire suppression system, they will have a Recaro race seat with a six-point harness, and the vehicles will use the standard dual-motor powertrain of 641 horsepower. Nothing standard about that. It's amazing, but that's what you get in the road-going version with Yokohama tyres designed for high-performance racing conditions. So that's at least two of the four vehicles they're taking. We'll carry on. This Autoblog article doesn't mention about the others, but it would be very interesting to see what else they bring. But Hyundai looking to take their Ioniq 5N and get some more racing headlines, and you would think EV records under their belt as well. And let's talk about Alfa Romeo then. So their new EV coming, the newly named Junior. An Italian government official ruled that the name Milano, initially chosen for Alfa Romeo's new compact sports car, which was to be made not in Italy but in Poland, cannot be used. And they named legal restrictions as the reason why this, I think it was a crowdsourced name, actually asking their fans what we should call our next EV. Milano was the winner. And so Stellantis look like they've taken this not only on the chin, but I think in good humour as well. The press release they put out yesterday said Alfa Romeo's Milano name is not okay. Okay, Alfa Romeo Junior it is then. Another name from their history. So this is still looking at their heritage. Stellantis wrote in their press release that during one of the most important weeks for Alfa Romeo's future, an Italian government official decided to step in and spoil their plans, declaring that the Milano name, chosen for its newly unveiled compact sports car, is banned by law. The Milano is a public favourite with the brand, paying tribute to the city where the history began in 1910 for Alfa Romeo, not the first time that they've asked the public's opinion on choosing the name of a car. It was previously done in 1966 with the Spider 1600 when the public decided to vote for Duetto. Despite Alfa Romeo believing that the name met all the legal requirements required, they decided not to fight the battle and instead change it from Milano to Junior. The Alfa Romeo team would like to thank the public, they said, for the positive feedback on the name change, the Italian dealer network for their support, journalists for the attention given to the car, and the government for all of the free publicity brought on by this debate. With a unique story and an endless list of names to choose from, the name change, they say, wasn't an issue for Stellantis. It was a pleasure, they said, to go over the list of names in the company's history and pick one out. The Alfa Romeo Junior is the new name for their EV, and it'll obviously still look and still have all the same specs as before, just a different badge on the back. And that issue looks like it's been put to bed. And finally, Mercedes-Benz are updating their e-Sprinter with a smaller battery. Well, a new option. You can still get the big battery. The 113 kilowatt hour with the 170 inch wheelbase now has an 81 kilowatt hour battery option. The new battery choice is available in two body styles, the existing high roof big box version and the newly introduced shorter standard roof model that is 11 inches lower. That's about 29 centimeters lower with a 144 inch wheelbase, and that's about 40 inches or 102 centimeters shorter in length. The introduction of the 81 kilowatt hour battery reduces the starting price significantly. Both battery sizes power a rear mounted electric motor, either 134 horsepower or 201 horsepower. You can get two motors on that. The range estimates for the big battery remain 297 miles on the WLTP cycle. The smaller battery, 81 kilowatt hours, hoping to do 190 miles on the WLTP test cycle. Mercedes-Benz pointing out that with the e-Sprinter buyers, fleet owners, that they don't typically exceed 150 miles any given day, so the entry price can be a lot lower now, reduced by about $10,000, starting at $75,000. They know their customers very well, and that would suffice for the use case of this working vehicle. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening and thank you for watching. If you are watching on YouTube, by the way, help us get to 10k subscribers by this summer. Hit that subscribe button if you are not already subscribed, and look out for new shows every single day as well. Hoping to do some more interviews at the weekends like we used to do in the old days with the Saturday special interviews every week. I'd love to get back into doing those as well. If there's somebody in the EV or mobility industry you'd like us to interview, then let me know in the comments of the YouTube of the show or email me anytime. hello@evnewsdaily.com. Thanks as always to everyone on the Patreon Legends list and our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and LeasePlan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one, see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.